It's the High Cooking Corner on 101.9 High FM.
Good morning and welcome to the cooking show. I'm Sharon Lurie, the kosher butcher's wife. And this show, as always, is all about the food, the recipes, the traditions, and please God, the love of the kitchen. So one of my all-time favorite things is learning about other cultures, watching, learning about the way they cook, how they cook, the utensils they use to cook, and watching people cook traditional food. I just find it so fascinating. That's why I'm always glued to the TV shows. But anyway, this week, I'm very happy to be sharing a chat that I had with Eunice Racheli Molefi, the author of South African Culinary Heritage. And we had a lovely chat, and she is my go-to lady on all things culturally culinary, cultural. I'm getting all my kids mixed up. And I'll also be sharing some of the award-winning writer Hope Molloy's recipes from his book, which is called Johan 14, and it explores the secrets of simple, home-cooked meals in South Africa's best townships, and it's told through the eyes of award-winning food writer, and it features authentic traditional dishes cooked with love, and he acknowledges the ability of countless unsung kitchen heroes, the mothers, fathers, grandparents, and siblings, to make culinary magic with often very little. It is a vital glimpse into South African township life. Moreover, it is a celebration of culture, resilience, human spirit, community, and family, all shared through a meal. So, let's start with our first bit of our chat to Eunice. With me today, I have Eunice Racheli Molefi. And Eunice, I must say, is my go-to lady on all things culinary within the different cultures and traditions of South Africans. And today, we decided we're going to be talking about weddings and festive occasions and perhaps even try and compare some of the similarities between our two cultures, which would be quite interesting. And so you're not new to Chai FM. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thanks.
So, you know, how this all started was a couple of weeks ago, my helper came to me and she said to me, I'm going off on this weekend. We're going to wherever. And she says, for a white wedding. I said, ah, so tell me, what is a white wedding? Oh. Okay. And basically what it boiled down to was that the lady gets married in a white dress. Is this sort of something that you've taken on from Western society? Is this a new thing?
Yes, it's something that we sort of inherited. Right. From the white community and the white culture. But yes, just to put the two weddings in perspective, right, the what the European culture calls an engagement.
Yes.
Us, we call it a lobola. Uh-huh. So we traditionally, as Africans, we don't propose and give a ring and kneel. The parents go to the two parents, the boy's parents go to the girl's parents, and they ask for their hand in marriage. So once that lobola part is done, then there is the engagement ceremony. So that engagement ceremony, that's what we call a traditional wedding.
Uh-huh.
And the engagement ceremony has got no legalities in them. So it's something that we do traditionally without going to the office of the magistrate.
For those who are listening from overseas, how would you translate lobola?
Like in the Indian culture, I think it's called dowry.
Ah, okay.
It's right. Similar to dowry, exactly right. Similar to dowry. And yes. Traditionally, before it evolved, yes. Lobola would be paid in terms of cows. Uh-huh. For instance, depending how valuable your daughter is, perhaps they'll say 4 cows, 15 cows, depending how rich the family is. If it's very rich families that are getting together, it will be many cows. If it's poor families, it will be numbered that way. But as it evolved now, it is now converted to, you know, rents. So they'll actually pay money. And right. That money is negotiated according to what the families can afford.
Uh-huh. Mm. Now, I read in your book, which is a most terrific book, The South African Culinary Heritage, that a cow today would be about 6,000 rand.
Has yes, gone up. Yes. It might be slightly, maybe 10,000 now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, meaning that the lobola is quite expensive now, because if they say they want 3 cows, then it's 30,000.
Uh-huh.
So it's, you know, on minimally people pay around about 30,000 for lobola, but that's negotiated between
right.
the families. Okay. And you, as a bride to be, you need to explain the situation of your husband to be to your family.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay, so now they've got engaged and everything's sorted out. Is there any way that the rest of the community or people, how would they know that they're engaged? Is there anything that you would wear, like an engagement ring or something?
Different cultures do different things. Some, but it's mainly beads.
Uh-huh.
So most of us, whether we are Zulu, Sotho, Shangaan, Pedi, it will always be the significance of beads. Certain beads that you wear will signify that this is a married woman, and then this is an unmarried woman. This is a woman that is available. And yeah, so it will be signified according to the necklaces that we wear, bead necklaces that we wear.
At the traditional wedding,
right?
Let's say I'm invited, Sharon, come to my traditional wedding. We are having it in Soweto,
right?
Okay. What would the protocol be? Is it an all-day affair? Would I arrive early in the morning? Is it a whole-day affair? And what food would I be served, for argument's sake?
Right. With a traditional wedding, it's a very long day affair, but there will be hours that are stipulated that perhaps lunch will be served from 12 till 4, and then the protocol is, you have to, that's where we shine with our regalia, traditional uh-huh. regalia, so that
yeah.
different tribes can be, and nationalities can come through. People from Swaziland, you'll see them by the material that they wear. You'll yes. see that other people with this material, they're from Lesotho. These are the Basotho people. Like me, I'm a Mosotho, so whatever I'll be wearing, the material will be made of Seshweshwe. And then if it's people from the northern province, we know they're very colorful, but they don't, the material are not with prints. It's uh-huh. just plain colors.
Yes.
So that's where now we really have to come out with the different material. And the significance of the outfit is the dressing material
uh-huh.
that determines where you come from. Uh-huh. Even if the pattern might differ, but we will know that, oh, she's wearing Seshweshwe, so she must be a Mosotho. Oh, yes. This one, the Swazi people wear their flag, the material of the flag.
Yes.
So you'll know, oh, this one is from Swaziland. Oh, this one is from a northern province. More informal is that food take the center stage,
yes.
and then the second is music. Because we don't hire musical bands and musicians. We are a cappella people, so we sing.
Yes.
So it will be dominated by singing. And singing will sort of bring people together, so you won't have different groups sitting right. at different tables. Yeah.
We arrive at the wedding,
right.
and what is the first thing that we do when we arrive at the venue?
The first thing is the singing.
Uh-huh.
There'll be a singing that is sort of welcoming the guests. And after the singing, it'll be the speeches, and our speeches are more like where the elders from both sides give guidance to the bride and groom. And it is specific, and in the families, there are certain people that are assigned for that duty. Mm-hmm. You know, in the family, that when there is a wedding, uncle so-and-so is the one that is supposed, and so-so is the one that's supposed. So there are certain people that are designated in the clan to come and address. Not everybody can just come and speak. You have to earn your position to be there in the clan. So there'll be speeches, and then from there, we go on to food.
Oh, okay. And what would the food be?
Right. The festivities will always start a day before, the previous night.
Right.
Because we have to slaughter.
Right.
We have to slaughter an animal.
Okay. Now, before we slaughter the animal, we're just going to go to a quick ad break.
An army marches on its stomach, and so does a community. Join Sharon Lurie Tuesdays at 11 a.m. for the Chai FM Cooking Corner. Come hungry.
So, Eunice, we were talking about the food, the most important thing. Mm-hmm. So, we arrive, and we are presented with were we singing and whatever, and then do you receive drinks or anything as you
Yes, okay. Yes. The welcome drinks, there are two types.
Right.
There's the non-alcoholic and the alcoholic. The non-alcoholic is the ginger beer, which is there in the recipe book.
Yes.
The traditional ginger beer. I don't know why it was called beer, because it's non-alcoholic, but it's a non-alcoholic drink that is homemade. And then we also have the traditional drink, which is mqombothi. So there'll always be that mqombothi. And remember mqombothi, if you remember in the book, mqombothi is like the people that give a speech, a clan member. In the community, there are specialties. You know, in the community, in the street, they know that mommy so-and-so is the one that does mqombothi for the whole community.
Uh-huh.
So if, and you know, they regard this position as, they take it very seriously. So somebody will come during the week and start preparing the mqombothi, which takes about 3 to 5 days to prepare and get to ferment it and get it polished up and get it very nice and clean. So that shall have been prepared by one member of the community beforehand. And then a previous night, remember I said that the festivities start a previous night.
Yes.
The slaughtering will be done the previous night. And it is a all-night party. It is an all-night party because
for the bride and the groom.
For all of us. For all of us. I don't know where we get the energy, but we survive the following day.
Yes.
So, The slaughtering during the night, we prepare the meat for tomorrow because the meat has to stand at least over after being slaughtered for at least 12 hours.
Wow.
And then the rest of the insides,
right.
Then we eat them as a snack during the night.
Okay. So
and we eat that with pap and mqombothi and khemere. So that's the food for the night.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, and then is there any special order? You know, who gets the food first? Is the father of the groom presented with the food first? Or any protocol with that?
The protocol is that the elders must be served first. The elders and the men. The men elders are the ones that are served first the meat, and then the female elders are supposed to be given the second. Then the rest of the family members. And the night before is mainly close family members, both from from both parties, because now on that day, this party, traditional party, always happens at the bride's place. Uh-huh. So after slaughtering, there's a certain part of the meat as a friendship offering that is being given to the groom's family, and they take the meat, and they go and have their own party the other side. So the previous night, there are two parties that are going on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Terrific. So now we're getting to the next day where the poor bride is exhausted from the night before.
Yes.
You normally have the wedding on the Saturday, right?
Yes.
Okay. So then everybody gets together round about lunchtime.
Right.
You've started to prepare and cook.
Yes.
In the morning.
Yes.
And then what happens? Does everybody sort of fill the room, fill the area, and then the bride comes in and the groom comes in? And tell us what happens.
Yes. After the great entrance and the speeches and all that,
yes,
food is being served.
Uh-huh.
And traditionally, things are done correctly. Most of our traditional food is being prepared by men. Uh-huh. Because remember, we prepare with those big, huge pots.
Yes.
So particularly the Tswana people are the people that like, the Tswana men are the ones that are specialists in cooking. But, you know, most of our cooking, we cook. That's why the partnership of men and women getting together, because for us to stir the pots, to do everything, we need manpower. So there'll always be a team of people working at the back to prepare the food. And then once people are seated, then it'll always be a buffet.
Ah, right.
So, yes.
Okay.
It'll always be a buffet where put his seat set up there and then people come and dish up. For those who are truly, truly traditional,
yes,
there'll be young maidens who are not married yet who'll serve as waiters and waitresses. So they'll actually go to which will be the cooking scene behind and go and get the food dished up and go and serve. But we are moving more away from that. So we usually prepare, you know, not in fancy dishes, sometimes fancy, sometimes not fancy,
right,
but we'll prepare a buffet with nice, beautiful nets covering the food, and people will dish up there.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, these waitresses and waiters, the unmarried ladies, young girls, are they part of the family, or is it just people that, you know, you can just get in?
It'll be mainly the young maidens in the family.
Uh-huh.
It'll be, and then if we're short of staff, then the neighbors come in. And remember, with traditional feasts in the African community, the people who work very closely are the family members and the neighbors.
Uh-huh.
The neighbors are always a very good support system.
Yes.
Yeah.
And what would you serve with the meat? Is that important?
Yes, that's very, very important. There are three. Let's start with the carbohydrate.
Okay.
Let's start with the meat itself. The meat will always have it in a stew form.
Well, because I know that you have say in your book.
Yes.
A man without, where's the meat? I had one old African proverb, which is a man without a wife is like a vase without flowers.
Right.
And then you said another one was to do with meat. Meat is meat and man must eat. Indodo idinyama.
So meat must serve the center stage. So most of the time we make a stew of the meat.
Yes.
And, some of the meat will serve as a snack as well, but the meat will be stew. And we traditionally cook just one type of meat, and it will just be the meat that we slaughter.
So you're stewing the meat, not frying it.
Not on a traditional day.
Ah,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Good. We might grill the meat and fry the meat the night before.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but on the day of the wedding, no, we usually stew the meat.
Yeah.
It's a stew. Then the starch will always have dumpling.
Yes.
And then we'll always have semp.
Yes.
Depending whether which tribe are you coming from, people from Eastern Cape would always have semp, but we fused the tradition. So
yes,
there'll always be semp, there'll always be dumpling. And because pap, we eat it on a daily basis. When we have traditional festivities, we don't cook pap.
Uh-huh.
Because we eat pap daily.
Yes.
So we will then add rice to accommodate other people who are not familiar with the traditional
now,
food.
Now, semp, for those who are listening from overseas, and I hope there are a lot of you, is a dehusked mealy kernel.
Yes.
And it's milled, a milled sort of kernel, crushed kernel.
Yes.
Okay. And you just, I know that you normally let it soak overnight.
Right.
So that really puffs up, and then you cook it the next day, and it's delicious.
Yes.
I put it in my cholent on a Saturday night, Friday night, let it cook through until Saturday, and it is soup.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yes. So that's our starch.
So that's your starch.
Then we have to have salad. So the most important salad that you have to have is beetroot salad. And the way it's so popular, it's called Soweto salad.
Oh, I was going to say. Yeah, I'm Soweto salad. Soweto salad.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's beetroot.
Always beetroot.
Have to. You have to. Yes. Otherwise, it's no meal.
A Soweto.
No. We get disappointed if there's no beetroot.
And how do you cook that?
You know, as the cuisine evolves, people do different things with it. But traditionally, we just do it with just boil it, grate it, cut it, put in vinegar and sugar. But as the cuisine evolves, it has become a very fancy salad. So it's beetroot, and then we have to have chakalaka. We have to have chakalaka, and then there must always be something chili, tomato and onion sauce that is chili, or just a chili sauce. So there must be something that is chili besides, because the chakalaka, you can have it hot or not hot. But generally in a traditional wedding, because you want to accommodate a lot of people, it will be just normal and without chili. And then you'll have a sauce that is very, very chili. And then the two veggies, these are the three salads. And the two veggies, traditional veggies, are pumpkin and cabbage.
Cabbage.
Cabbage. So the alternative of cabbage is morocco. But morocco is very labor intense.
Yes.
So for big gatherings, you'd rather opt for cabbage. Uh-huh. For smaller gatherings, it has got to be morocco and pumpkin.
Now, morocco, would you say, is more like a spinach?
Yeah, wild spinach.
Is it sweeter or more bitter? Peppery, morocco.
I think it's sweeter.
Sweeter.
Yeah,
it's sweeter. If I have to give a recipe for morocco, then I can tell people that if they can't get, they can use
spinach.
Spinach.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we've eaten ourselves full. And then do you serve a dessert?
Yes. You know, traditionally, we don't serve dessert. For dessert, we always have ginger beer and scones. But our scones are not these English muffin soft scones. Ours are a little bit hard and crunchy. So traditionally for us, dessert is ginger beer and scones. But as I say, we keep on evolving. Now, the basic dessert that we always serve is custard and jelly.
Yes.
Plain custard and jelly. But if you have scones and ginger beer, you know, your guests will be happy. Then after eating all the courses, then usually the bride and the groom will go and change to something else. Now, this second, we call it a second attire. This second outfit will be the traditional clothes that shows the bride the nationality into which the bride is marrying into. Like if I'm a Zulu marrying into the family of Sotus, then my outfit will show that. So even if I'm a Zulu, I'll be wearing a Seshweshwe dress to show that now I'm going into this family. And that outfit now is the most important outfit, because it's like now it's sealing the deal that now I'm belonging to this family. I'm embracing their culture. I'm embracing what they wear. I'm embracing everything. So that is very significant. And that's where now the dancing and the music is going to take place.
Army marches on its stomach, and so does a community. Join Sharon Lurie Tuesdays at 11 a.m. for the Chai FM Cooking Corner. Come hungry.
Okay, so as I said, I'd come back with a couple of recipes for you. And before we end our chat to Eunice, and thank you so much to Paula, who is loving the show, and another SMS, loving the program. Thank you. Sorry, can't continue to listen, Linda. Thank you for listening. It's so exciting that people are out there listening to me. So one recipe before we go to the end of the show, and that is for corn soup. And it's called Isosopu Yombona. Okay, and it's corn soup, and this is a traditional Xhosa soup made with the corn and sugar beans, made with corn and sugar beans and boiled until really tender and creamy. I've never tried it until I started working as an assistant food editor on a magazine, says Hope Malol. Now, Hope, as I mentioned before, is an award-winning writer. And this is his new book that's out. Quivertree Publications have brought it out, and it's called Johan 14, and it's real South African food. And it's a great book for all those who want to give somebody, perhaps overseas, a book on traditional food in South Africa. Okay, so he says, one of my colleagues, it was a woman, asked me if I knew it. I didn't, so I had to research it and try it out. It's now my favorite soup of all. So comforting, and it is so easy to make. And he's quite right. It is really easy to make. All you need are 5 fresh corn cob kernels, cut off the kernel of the cob. You need 1.5 cups of dried sugar beans. You would need to soak overnight. Very important to soak them overnight. It cuts the cooking time in half. You'd also need 4 cups of water, 1 onion chopped, 2 potatoes cubed, and 2 teaspoons of curry powder, which is a nice addition to it, and 1 teaspoon of salt. So what you do is you'd place the corn and beans in a large pot. What I did was I didn't cut the corn off the cobs. I just got a kilo of frozen sweet corn. And then I placed the corn and the beans in a large pot, and I covered it with the water. So that is 1 liter of water. Brought it to the boil. Then you reduce the heat to low. You cover with a lid and you allow it to simmer for about an hour, stirring regularly. And then if you need more water, you just add a little bit more water, because some sugar beans absorb a lot more water. Others don't. They may be a little old. And then, you know, the beans, so you need to add a little bit more water. And then you add the onion, potato and the curry powder, and you just let that simmer for another hour, until all the ingredients are delicious and soft. And you just season that with salt. And it's so nice to have it on these nice cold-ish nights that we're starting to have. So, and something important, I would cut the potatoes up quite small. You don't want them too big. I'll be coming back with a couple more recipes to share with you, traditional recipes. But what I did just to end off our chat to Eunice was I asked her whether she felt family values were dissipating and how she would recreate these cultural family traditions of togetherness. And let's hear what she had to say.
It must start with little families, that as individual families, we make sure that we eat together. It must start there.
Right, then, ground roots.
Yeah. In small little families. The second thing is, as extended families, yes, we need to get together. We have lost that you meet on Fridays, isn't it?
Yes.
Us tradition and yes, yes. So we need to get back to a stage whereby, if you are a mother, a grandmother, a grandfather, the children must come and visit.
Sunday lunch.
We must get to that. Yes. But for us to get it right, I must start with my own children and teach them that, you know, and once I get that right, then when they grow up, then they will know that Saturday, all of us, we have to go to granny. Right. Sunday, we all have to go to granny. And yeah, so that's how it should start. And when I speak to people, I always say, start with identifying those recipes that you grew up with. They will ignite those good memories. Start finding out what did my grandmother used to cook for us. Yes. What was my mother's favorite? That's the starting point. That's how I started. I started by going to my mother to get the recipes of a dumpling.
Yes.
So we have to start by, let's collect the recipes, and the recipes will ignite good memories, family memories. Yes. Yeah.
Well, I remember Anita Tripeda, saying that, you know, she's written a few books on Madiba, and she was saying that if Zoli didn't get his porridge right in the morning.
Right.
You know, it doesn't taste like home. It doesn't taste like my mother made. You
and
know?
It has and to be smooth.
Yes, and you wanted it in served in the
calabash.
The calabash, thank you. And I'm trying to get a calabash. I don't know where I can get one from.
Oh, okay.
I'm looking everywhere.
I'll make sure that you have one. Make sure that you have one.
And so, yeah, it's all about the home.
Yes.
It's all about, you know, and it's all about tradition and passing on tradition.
Exactly.
And not worrying so much about what's out there on the western side and trying to eat that kind of food. Just bring home that tradition.
Yeah.
And you're doing so well at it, Eunice.
Thank you,
and please, God, may it continue to grow, and may all your family come to you on Sundays.
Thank you.
And may your books continue to grow. That's the most important.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having
me. You carry such beautiful information on heritage and culture. And thank you for joining us
today. Thank you so much. It's always good to be here.
An army marches on its stomach, and so does a community. Join Sharon Lurie Tuesdays at 11 a.m. for the Chai FM Cooking Corner. Come hungry.
You're tuned into the Cooking Corner. Chai FM 101.9 Chai FM, and our studio number, if you'd like to call us, want to have a chat, want to find out about a recipe, 010-140-3020. Or you can SMS us on air at 34519. And I'm here to answer any questions, so anything you would like to know. One thing that Eunice had asked me to share is a ginger beer recipe. And I promised that I would share this. So here goes. And I found Hope Millar's recipe terrific. And it's homemade ginger beer. And as Eunice said, when you go to a wedding, you know, the desserts aren't so important. It's jelly, trifle, whatever. But something that they really enjoy is just ginger beer and some scones. So this is a recipe for homemade ginger beer. And it is 3 cups of cold water, 1 cup of caster sugar, 1 lemon thickly sliced, an 8-centimeter piece of ginger peeled and chopped, 1 teaspoon ground ginger, 1/2 teaspoon cream of tartar, 1 liter cold water, and 1/2 teaspoon of instant yeast. So the instant yeast is actually the rapid rising one. You'll normally find it. I think it's in a green packet or purple packet. So what you do is, in a large pot with a lid, you combine 3 cups of water, the caster sugar, which was 1 cup, the lemon, which was 1 lemon thickly sliced. And oh, there's such lovely lemons on our trees lately, so we can pick a lovely lemon off a tree. The lemon, the ginger, the 8 centimeter, imagine 8 meters of ginger, or 8 centimeter piece of ginger peeled and chopped, and cream of tartar. You would need 1/2 teaspoon. And you slowly bring that to a boil over medium heat and just stirring it until all the sugar dissolves. And then you reduce the heat and you simmer it for about 5 minutes. Then you add 4 cups of cold water and you sprinkle the yeast on top and take it off the heat, cover with a lid and leave it overnight in a cool place. The next day, sterilize bottles by washing them in hot soapy water and rinsing them with hot water. Strain the ginger beer through a sieve and divide among the bottles. Leave a 5-centimeter gap at the top to allow for the buildup of gases. Then you screw on the lids tightly and you leave it in a cool place. Check every few hours and unscrewing the cap a little as the pressure builds up to allow the gases to escape is quite important because you don't want explosions all over your kitchen. And the ginger beer is ready to drink when fizzy, which will be within about 12 hours, depending on how hot the weather is. So you chill and you serve that with plenty of ice and make sure that you drink it within 3 days. So there's a nice recipe for ginger beer, which is quite delicious and very refreshing on a hot day. And now I am going to give you another recipe that Eunice asked me please to share with everybody. It's a pap with boerewors sauce. Now, all these recipes are available in Hope Malawa's book. Hope is H-O-P-E and his surname is Malau, M-A-L-A-U. And it's Johan 14. I'm not sure exactly the story behind Johan 14. I think it's something to do with cabbage. But there's a picture of him on the front of the book holding a cabbage. And it's real South African food. And it really is terrific. I mean, they've got all the township recipes and all the things that fascinate us that we haven't made but we're so interested in. But pap en wors, I know, something that we've actually made quite often. But for those out of town and those who want a nice sauce, a boerewors sauce, here goes. An alternative to the traditional South African braai in which boerewors is grilled on the coals, this township party staple dish involves cutting up the famous sausage and cooking it in a sauce. This is then served with pap and enjoyed at formal gatherings over a couple of drinks. Eaten with your hands, you break off bits of pap to mop up the sauce. Okay, so your pap would be 1.5 cups of water, a teaspoon of salt, and 3 cups of maize meal, or mealie-meal as we call it. Now, your boerewors sauce would be about 0.5 kilo of boerewors, 1 onion chopped, 1 red chili, very important. I don't know if you remember that Una said it's very important to have a nice tomato sauce or a nice gravy at the wedding. And, you know, you start off with it being quite mild, but you must always have a little dish of something spicy on the side, some chili on the side that you could add. So this boerewors sauce only uses 1 red chili, but you can add some more. So it's, as I say, 500 grams of boerewors, 1 onion chopped, 1 red chili chopped, 4 tomatoes chopped, nice ripe tomatoes. You don't want them to be sort of yellowy orange. They must be lovely and red. 1 tablespoon of red wine vinegar, 1 tablespoon brown sugar. Very important to always add sugar to your tomatoes to take away that sort of acidic tart taste. And you will also need 2 tablespoons of brown onion soup powder. You'll also need 0.5 cup of water and salt and pepper. And all you do is you bring the water and salt to a boil in a pot. You add the maize meal all at once without stirring it. Then you reduce the heat. You put the lid on and you let it simmer for 20 minutes or until it's cooked. And then you stir with a fork until it's crumbly. Other people have other traditions where they don't make it as crumbly, but that depends on how you enjoy your pap. Then you heat a frying pan over medium heat and you cook the boerewors covered with the lid until it's browned. And then you remove from the pan and you set it aside. You fry the onions in the same pan in which you are frying the boerewors. You stir in the chili, the tomato, and you cook it over low heat for about 3 minutes. You add in the vinegar, sugar, and the soup powder into a smooth paste, and you add it to the tomato mixture with the water, and you simmer it for a further 10 minutes, season with salt and pepper. And then you slice the boerewors, and you add it to the sauce, and you simmer until heated through, and you serve the sauce over the pap. And it's to ad break we go.
An army marches on its stomach, and so does a community. Join Sharon Lurie Tuesdays at 11 a.m. for the Chai FM Cooking Corner. Come hungry.
Welcome back to the show. We are talking all the lovely cultural food available in South Africa, and one other recipe that Eunice asked me to please share was the kwotta. Okay, this is real township food, and it's found mostly in the northwest and Gauteng. And this is the township version of the burger, only instead of rolls, we use bread, says Hope Malau. Okay, so what they do is kwotta literally means quarter. So it's spelled K-O-T-A. And it literally means a quarter because a loaf of bread is quartered, cut into two halves, and then each half is cut in two again. So the soft center is then hollowed out, and the crusty cavity is stuffed with chips and eggs and achar and polony and Russian sausages and Vienna sausages and a sauce and you name it. The stuffing variation, of course, is limited only by how much money you have. From the cheap two-ingredient kwotta to an expensive full house one with everything. It's a perfect lunch for school kids because of its cost effectiveness, and the best way to eat it is compressed. So it's like, you know, when you take a piece of challah out the middle of your challah, you compress it and eat that. So I suppose it's the same kind of feel. And this is done by placing the kwotta. Now you have to listen to this. This is done by placing the kwotta behind a school bus tire to roll over and flatten it, mashing the sides so that each ingredient is well represented in every bite. More importantly, it also makes it easier to share. Now, I hope they cover it before they roll it under the tire. So what it is a loaf of white bread. I'm going to give you their recipe, which is for half a cup of chicken liver pate. So I suppose you could use some nice chopped liver. 1 cup of tomato sauce. 1 cup of mango achar. 2 large potatoes sliced into matchsticks and deep fried. 8 slices of polony or other cold meat. 4 Vienna sausages sliced in half lengthwise. 4 smoked Russian sausages sliced in half lengthwise. An avocado sliced. And they use cheese. Obviously, we wouldn't, or you could get the paro cheese. And then apparently, the best thing is to put the mango achar on top. And you could even add fried onions on top of that. I mean, this is not something that you would eat before you go and have a cholesterol test. But never mind, it's still a delicious, delicious meal. And that really keeps you going. So on that note, on that delicious kwotta, it's time for me to say goodbye and to remember it's the eaten meat that makes the show complete. Thank you for joining me. And before I forget, thank you, Craig, because you know, I always forget to thank Craig. But in my heart, I'm feeling it.